But we've thought about a lot of topics as we've studied through Proverbs over these last several weeks. Some of it's been kind of hard. Being wise has certain demands on our lives, certain actions that we have to take, others we have to avoid. Today's subject is no different. It does require certain activity. The general subject I want us to think about today is money. The Bible has an awful lot to say about money. Wise people handle money well. Foolish people don't handle money well. And the Bible covers an awful lot of topics in that category of money. You think with me about some of them. Most of the ideas fall into two different categories: how you get money and then what you do with it if you have it. And the Bible gives some pretty explicit guidelines. You can get it in more than one way. You can get it by working. That's the primary way to get it. But you can also get it by investing. You can get it by inheriting, if the government will let you. You can have somebody give money to you. Those are okay ways to get money. It is not okay to get money by stealing it, by deceiving somebody to get it, by extorting money, or by charging predatory interest rates. Also, you have to be really careful not to let wealth become the focus of your life. The Bible says a good bit about not having that be your primary pursuit, always keeping it in perspective. You have to be extremely careful if you're going to borrow money. Some would say don't borrow it at all. But certainly there's room for a lot of caution if you do borrow money. Once you have money, you're not to waste it. You're not to trust in it. You're not to weary yourself trying to get more of it. But you can save it. You can spend it on what you need. You can give it away. You can give it in worship, or you can give it to other people. Now, beyond those categories, there are statements like money not being as good as a good name. It's not as valuable as a good name. There's a lot of reminders in the Scripture that money doesn't last. It is for this life only. You can't take it with you, is how we tend to say that. And money cannot help you spiritually. It can hurt you spiritually, but it cannot help you spiritually. Well, many of those aspects about money are covered in the book of Proverbs. Those are all biblical aspects. Not all of them come up in Proverbs, but many of them do. And there's one part of this subject of money that I want us to think in particular about today that does come up a lot in the book of Proverbs. I haven't mentioned it yet in this list. It seems to come up more often than most topics in Proverbs. So I want you to think in particular with me today about generosity. Again and again, this comes up in the book of Proverbs. And it always comes up this way. If you were going to sum it up, the wise are generous and the foolish are not. The wise are generous and the foolish are not. And the book of Proverbs touches on this in many places. But today I want to look at primarily at Proverbs chapter 11. Verses 24 and 25. Proverbs 11, 24 and 25. Proverbs 11, 24. There is one who scatters and yet increases all the more. And there is one who withholds what is justly due, and yet it results only in want. The generous man will be prosperous, and he who waters will himself be watered. Now, verse 24 presents for us two extremes in how people deal with money, particularly in this category of generosity. One guy scatters. This guy is generous to the point that it looks like he's throwing his money to the wind. People would call this kind of generosity foolish. Many people would. He's spreading it everywhere. He's distributing his money away from himself. That would be, you know, what scattering. Like you throw seeds, you're just tossing it out there. You're not keeping it in your pockets. And yet this guy who is behaving in a fashion that many people would call reckless increases all the more. The more he throws away in generous giving, the more he has. The other guy is at the other extreme end of the spectrum in this category we call generosity. This other guy withholds what is justly due. So not only does he avoid giving generously or avoid giving at all, but he doesn't even pay what he ought to pay. This guy scatters nothing. He's keeping everything he can keep, even to a fault, even keeping what is not rightfully his. This would be the kind of person who pays his employees too little. The job pays this everywhere else, but it pays this working for this guy. This would be the guy who never tips enough, never thinks about what to take care of somebody else with, even if they've earned it, even if they've got it coming, even if everybody else would do it and wouldn't even call it generous, would just call it the norm. This guy won't do it. He keeps his. Always shorting somebody else in his quest to have more money. Now, the result for this guy is also a little different from what you might expect. You might not think the guy throwing money away, scattering it everywhere, is going to get more for the trouble. And you might not expect what happens to this guy, but this guy who keeps everything he can keep does not have enough. And it's a result of how he acts. It says the result, it results only in want. It comes from how he's behaving, that he doesn't have enough. For all of his keeping, for all of his shorting somebody else and failing to think of what somebody else has earned, let alone what else they might need, for all of his maneuvering, it results in want. Now that doesn't mean I want a new Lexus. That means I don't have enough. He really, it's not a preference. He really doesn't have what he needs. He cannot manage to get enough money together no matter what he does. He's lacking some basic thing. So one guy gives what seems to be, you know, with wild abandon, and his net worth increases. The other guy, at the other extreme of the spectrum, gives nothing, including what he ought to pay, and yet his net worth goes down. He can't make enough no matter what he does. Now, obviously, there are a lot of people who are not at those two poles. There are some who are occasionally generous and some who are occasionally miserly, and people all along that spectrum. But here are the extremes. And the point I want you to get from these two extremes is there's more to money than math. There is more to your personal financial situation than adding and subtracting. There's more to how you handle your money than the simple income and outgo that you think you can put a pencil to. The guy who is not wise, and the guy who is wise, the guy who has nothing for all of his withholding, and the guy who scatters and increases, both of them prove that there's more to this than adding and subtracting. So the guy who withholds what is justly due has forgotten something about money, or never knew it. And the aspect of money that he's forgotten is that God is the provider of everything that we have. That God is sovereign over the adding and subtracting in this guy's budget. He's forgotten about God. He's not factoring in the one who makes this all work, who gives him the ability to make money and gives him the ability to hang on to it. He's thinking only about the math. And he's going, if I can add this, and I can add this, and I can add this, and I can keep from subtracting this and this and this, then I'm going to have this much, and that's going to be good. And it never works. It never works. If you forget God, then it goes away. You can't hang on to it. You're pouring it into a sieve and it just goes right through. People who leave God out of their personal finances are acting foolishly. And we need to understand this is the root problem when we fail to be generous. We have forgotten God. And it's foolish. People who think only about the math are acting in the flesh without any consideration of God's working in that aspect of our lives. Now the wise, on the other hand, know that it is God who provides everything, including their ability to earn money. And the wise know that God is generous, that it is in His nature to be generous, that He's loving, and in being loving, He's generous. He makes His rain to fall on the just and the unjust. He gives freely. And the wise know that. And they're seeking to be like God. And it's not just that the wise say, well, I'd like to be more like God. They really love the character of God and the person of God. And as they become more like God, generosity is part of the package. Now, even in this, even for the guy who's generous, there's more to this than math. Even being generous, knowing that God blesses generosity, is not just a mathematical calculation. And a lot of people think that it is. I've heard a lot of people say, well, I'm going to give this, and that way God will give me more. And you've heard a lot of television preachers. We want you to be blessed. And if you'll send me a $1,000 faith gift, God will bless you. And if you want to get off their mailing list, just write them back and say, I want you to be blessed, so you send me a $1,000 faith gift so that God can bless you. And they'll stop bothering you when you do that. See, that's calculating. That's not the same as generosity, is it? That's a shrewd investment scheme. If I do this, God will be obligated to do something for me. This is a way for me to make money without having to work. I'll send my $1,000 faith gift in, and God will pour it out into my lap, and I can sit here on the couch and watch another Robert Tilton episode. That's not generosity. Generosity springs from a heart of love where you're not worried about what you're going to get in return. So for either of these two guys, just calculating the math only ruins the whole deal. It's not generosity if you're thinking, I'm going to give this so God will give me that back. So you can't just say, well, I've read my Bible and I've figured out the way to get God to bless me. And it's for me to write this check. And I'm going to force God's hand because I want this. And if I put 1,000 in, I'm going to get 5,000 back because God's generous and that way. And I need 5, so I'm going to invest this 1. That's not generosity. God blesses people, though, who give because they love. He blesses people who give because they're like God. Who give without thinking, I'm going to get something back. Who give because their hearts are touched by some need somewhere, some longing to support something good. God does not bless a cold, calculating, legalistic attempt at producing more for myself. So be sure that that's not what we're talking about. God doesn't bless that. This proverb says the generous will prosper, not those who have figured out the biblical math will prosper. So giving something specifically to get more for yourself is not what generosity is. If you give because you love, you give because you want to, because your heart's been touched by God Himself, you're not worried about what you get in return, you know in general that God does bless generosity, but that's not why you're doing this. You're doing this because you want to, because it's right, and because this is how God is, and the more I get to be like Him, the more I want to participate in this kind of thing. Well, that's actually being generous, and that's what God has promised to bless. And that's what this proverb is talking about. There's one who scatters and yet increases all the more, and there's one who withholds what is justly due, and yet it results only in want. Now, if you're of that very methodical mindset that many of us are, you're thinking, how can this be? Because math doesn't vary, right? One and one is always two. It is always two. Two plus two is always four. It's always four. Even with this new feel-good education, two and two still has to be four. You can't, you know, even if we're going to build your self-esteem and tell you you're doing good even though you got the wrong answer, the banker is going to tell you two and two is still four. So how does this work? How can you scatter and yet have more? Well, there are a couple of things that happen in the lives of the people who are generous. First of all, God is able to preserve what you have. You think about how much of your life is spent fixing something that broke and maintaining something that's just wearing out. You got to paint the house or wash the house if it's vinyl. And then you're going to need new vinyl. You're going to need a new roof. Even the things that last 20 years still have to be replaced. You think about how much you spend maintaining. Your clothes wore out, you got to buy new clothes. Your car broke, you got to fix it. You need it. And you spend a lot of the money that you earn fixing the things that are decaying in this fallen world. Stuff breaks and it costs money. But God can minimize this, and He does in the lives of the generous. It's not that you never need a new roof or you never need to paint your house, but God can minimize that stuff. And if you spend less on those things, then you have more. And that's one way that God overrides the mathematics. You think about the children of Israel when they left Egypt and then they rebelled against God. They didn't go into the promised land, and God said, I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to let you guys wander around the desert until you're all dead, and then I'm going to let your kids go in. And so they wandered around the desert for 40 years. And nobody's sandals wore out, and nobody's clothing wore out. There wasn't a store, you see, to buy more. There was no money to buy. Well, they had stuff they had brought from Egypt, but there's nowhere to buy it anyway. But God overrides sometimes, and He did in that case, this normal wear and tear of life. He minimizes the maintenance costs for those that He blesses. Depreciation is not a constant, and that's why people mess up if they're just doing the adding and subtracting. God can override that stuff and minimize it. The other way that God blesses beyond the math in the lives of the generous is that He can give you more in ways that you can't get more by yourself. He can cause you to be more productive. He can make your investments work. He can give you increase in any number of ways. And you may think, well, I don't see any increase. Well, maybe the job you would have had if you weren't generous would pay half as much. You may not note that it's an increase, and yet it can be. God can give you more and does give you more. Now, people who are not generous tend not to be generous because of fear, at least in a setting like this one. Sometimes people are just greedy, but usually church people are just afraid. I'm not going to have enough. I want to give, but I don't have enough. And so we tend to forget that God provides everything anyway and that He can override the math, that He can give you more, and He can keep what you have from going away. Now Malachi, when he rebuked Israel, well actually when God rebuked Israel and Malachi recorded it for us, God rebuked Israel for not giving faithfully, and he mentions both of these aspects of what he does. It's in Malachi 3. It says, "You are cursed with a curse, for you are robbing me, the whole nation of you. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse so that there may be food for my house. And test me now in this, says the Lord of hosts." Here's the first one. "If I will not open for you the windows of heaven and pour out for you a blessing until it overflows." And here's the second one. "Then I will rebuke the devourer for you so that it may not destroy the fruits of the ground, nor will your vine of the field cast its grapes, says the Lord of hosts." Those are actually in the opposite order from the way I presented them, but same two concepts. God can give you more. God can keep what you have from going away. So God says, for those who trust Him, He overrides the math in two ways and takes care of His children. Now the wise are resting in God and trusting that He ultimately is the one who provides for us. And so the wise don't get caught up in trying to keep everything for themselves. Now, frankly, this is an area in which many Christians fail miserably. sometimes people are just greedy, but I don't think that's the real reason that most Christians fail. Most often, in the church at least, people are being fearful and they're being short-sighted. And they want to be generous. I think if you're really a believer, you want to be. God has changed your heart. And I think people will be telling themselves, I'm going to be generous when I have more. You know, I intend to do this. I just don't have enough right now to be giving anything that's going to make a difference anyway. But they're not opposed to the idea of giving. They just don't think they have enough to give. They don't have enough total for them to give any or to give anything that could be called generous. So I think that forgetting that there's more to it than the math is a real problem for the church. And then the other aspect of this is that maybe we forget that God never put us here to serve ourselves. We don't come first. That's antithetical to the calling. Jesus said, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself. So there's a problem if we put ourselves first and only after everything I need, or maybe even everything I want, is taken care of, then I'll give. That's an upside-down Christianity. We need to be ready to do for others first and to give unto God first of all. Now, this is one of the reasons I'm so thankful for what's going on in Lakeshore and the way God opened a door for us to minister to the church down in Lakeshore and all those people who are in serious need right now, the church and the community around it. Because even a congregation needs to be focused on others first, not on itself. We need that. And if ministry ever becomes all about us, if our church, if the reason we exist ever becomes all about us, we're going to shrivel up and die. And what will be left is a social action organization or a club where people sing and talk about how great they are, how great we are, you know, whatever. I've been in one of those churches, man. It's not pretty. If we ever start to think we exist as a church to serve ourselves, it's over. Blessing of God will go out the window and we'll be sitting around wondering why we don't even like each other anymore. And you may have seen this happen, but I certainly have. This outward focus that we've been able to develop more of because of a need in Lakeshore has been a blessing to our congregation, and I can already see the fruit of it, and I hope you can. It's blessed us. And it's because God blesses those who bless others. This is how it works. You spend your time trying to bless somebody else, you cannot help but be blessed. This is the report that everybody gives when they come back from Lakeshore or even when we call them on the phone. This is what Pam's saying on the phone. Chuck was telling me about it this morning. She's the most blessed of all, she thinks. But Rodney thought that, I thought that, Ronnie thought that, everybody. We came back with so much more. We tried to give and we got blessed more. How is that? It's because there's more to this than math, and God blesses those who bless others. Now the same thing is true in your personal finances. God's doing this in our midst as a church, and God is doing this in the lives of those who are generous, even in our midst. It works the same way individually, and it works in the category of money, just like it works in the category of your time and your effort spent in helping somebody else. And this is exactly what verse 25 is talking about. It says, the generous man will be prosperous, and he who waters will himself be watered. You cannot spend your life watering somebody else, taking care of their needs, providing for their needs, and not be watered yourself. You can't. God just does it this way. This is how He's chosen to do it. It's true for churches. It's true for individuals. Well, this passage continues to teach that concept. Look at verse 26. He who withholds grain, the people will curse him, but blessing will be on the head of him who sells it. He who diligently seeks good seeks favor, but he who seeks evil, evil will come to him. He who trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like a green leaf. Now, the person who withholds grain in verse 26 is hoarding it. He's got more than he needs, and he's keeping it anyway and hoping the price will go up. I'm going to corner the market so that I can make twice as much profit selling it later instead of selling it now. And verse 26, the latter part says, but blessing will be on the head of him who sells it. This guy doesn't even have to give it away. Just sell it for a fair price and you'll be blessed. Don't try to take advantage of people to have more. Just be fair. And then verse 28 talks about the person who trusts in riches. And this is just another description of one who has left God out of that part of our lives that we call net worth or personal finances or money. And we're told this person's going to fall. You're headed for trouble if you trust in money. Now, I would have you note here that righteousness and trusting in riches are opposites in this verse. He who trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like a green leaf. Those are opposites. Trusting in money and righteousness are mutually exclusive concepts. So if you trust in your riches, it's awful hard to let go of them. You're giving your God up. You can't do that unless you forsake it as your God. And yet the person who clings to riches and thinks this is my hope, that person is headed for a fall. The wise are generous, the foolish are not. Now this is a fairly easy place to check yourself. This is pretty cut and dried. You do have to define what generosity is, but that's not that hard. You know if you're generous or not. So you ask yourself, am I generous or am I not? Am I focused on the math or am I focused on being like my God and giving in love? Not calculating, but being generous. Generosity is never equated with shrewd financial skills. It's not equated with only the rich. It's equated with righteousness. Look at Proverbs 21, verse 25. Proverbs 21, 25. The desire of the sluggard puts him to death, for his hands refuse to work. All day long he is craving, while the righteous gives and does not hold back. The righteous person is the person who is generous, in verse 26. The lazy person is focused on money. He won't do anything to get it, but money is still his motivator. But the righteous person is generous. It's part of the nature of being righteous. Now, Proverbs has something to say about the calculating person too. It has something to say about the TV preacher who tries to get you to be calculating, and it has something to say about you if you fall for it. Send me $1,000 so God will give you $10,000. Look at Proverbs 23. Verse 6. Do not eat the bread of a selfish man or desire his delicacies, for as he thinks within himself, so he is. He says to you, eat and drink, but his heart is not with you. You will vomit up the morsel you have eaten and waste your compliments. Now, this is not a pretty picture. You don't want to get a visual. But this is a person who gives, but not from a pure heart. There are a lot of people like that who think, well, I'm going to put in my little bit so that I can be in the group. I'm going to put in my little bit so that everybody will be impressed or whatever. And they say to you, eat, drink, come on, go ahead. But if they're selfish, you're wasting your compliments and it's going to come back to hurt you. Here's another one, Proverbs 22 and verse 16. He who oppresses the poor to make more for himself, or who gives to the rich, will only come to poverty. Now this is talking about two different kind of people who are headed for trouble. One is going to oppress the poor. He's squeezing those who cannot fight back very effectively, those who are desperate or in trouble. He's going to use them trying to get rich. And it's not going to work, is what this proverb is saying. But the other guy is giving to the rich. Well, why would you do that? Why would you give, but I'm going to designate my gift to the rich? What's the point of that? Well, that's giving to get, isn't it? You're going to try to impress the person who has a lot to give you. So, I'm going to give to this guy so he'll like me, so I'll have more business contacts, maybe he'll give me a gift in return, and he can afford a better gift than I can. And this proverb says you're headed for poverty if you're thinking that way. God doesn't bless that. God doesn't bless it. So there is giving that's not generous. Regardless of the amount, it doesn't say in any of these verses, if you're rich, be generous, or if you give this big a gift, it doesn't say that. There's a kind of giving that's generous, whether you have a little bit or a lot. There's a kind of giving that's not generous at all, whether you have a little bit or a lot. Whatever you have, you need to consider it a blessing from the Lord. And whether it's a little or a lot, if you're wise, you're going to be generous. And if you're not generous, the book of Proverbs says you're not wise. It doesn't put you in that category. So, let's say that you have a friend. I'm going to bring the friend back in. We haven't used him in a while. Today's the day. I mean, we need that friend today. You've got a friend who is not generous. And you take that friend a CD of today's lesson, and that friend becomes convicted. I should be generous, but I'm not. What does your friend need to do specifically? Having not been generous, coming under conviction, I ought to be generous. What's next? What do you do? Got to repent to God. Repent of being selfish. Yeah, that's good. Now that would make this a spiritual issue. Is that kind of... People don't like to make money a spiritual issue, do they? Well, that's just business. You just handle the preaching. We'll take care of the money. Oh, did it? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Those things just come flooding back sometimes. Confession and repentance is a big part of this. It's really the first step, because selfishness is a spiritual issue. Just as generosity is a spiritual issue that's equated with righteousness, selfishness is just sin. And if that's driving it, then it does take repentance, confession. There needs to be some effort in that to learn to rely on God, to maybe specifically pray about resting in God where money is concerned, if that's a hard thing for your friend. You know, you want to pat him on the head and say, you got to learn just to rely on the Lord. Quit clinging to this money. It won't help you. All right, so now let's say you have this talk and your friend comes around. Okay, I have repented. I've prayed about that. I think I've dealt with the spiritual issue. What's next?
Probably find some opportunities to give. You know, I mean, it usually starts... That's... Start to exercise, you know, the generosity, find opportunities.
Find opportunities and give. That's good. Something else or some subcategory thereof? Anybody else got a thought?
God is even sovereign in that as well. If your heart is truly repentant in that area, the opportunities will come.
That's good. I don't know how to write all that, but that's real good. God will, they'll be there if you're
God,
looking for them.
If you're truly repentant in that area, it's, I find that I have to deal with it as much as anybody when it comes to giving good advice. I find that when my heart is truly right about that, the opportunities do come.
That's good.
You might need to examine your lifestyle.
Oh, Tim, man. I couldn't have paid him to do better. That's good. Thank you. We did not collaborate on that. You do need to examine your lifestyle. If there's not that much slack in it, you may have to make some hard decisions before you can be generous. You're not to be generous at the expense of people you owe money to who have earned it. You may have to cut your cost of living so there's slack in your budget. It's great. And those are, that's a whole series of hard choices if you're living at 100% of your budget, isn't it? 100% of your income. Gary?
Well, I mean, I've read a book, it's called Need, the New Religion. And I think...
Oh, you got to let me borrow that one.
I'll have to let you borrow it. And what it is the book examines the idea of our language when it comes to this whole idea of, you know, the way we live, the way we spend, and our tendency to not distinguish the difference between I need and I want. Because the tendency is we start substituting I need something for I want, and that gives us more justification in doing the things we do with our money. So, you know, we start saying, of course, you can use an example of the consumerism here in America. Look at all the commercials. You know, they make all of what they're trying to sell a matter of need instead of want.
Yeah.
They have to do that to provoke us as consumers to go ahead and buy things that we don't need at all.
Right, and didn't know we wanted till we
That's
saw the commercial.
Right. Exactly, exactly.
Yep.
So, you know, because I want becomes, in most people's thinking, you know, quite selfish. But if you substitute I need, then you have complete justification in spending your money on superfluous things that really end up, you know, going to garage sales, you know, in a year.
So you do have to do something along your mindset just to avoid being shallow in your desires. Now I want you to think about, I gave the real brief illustration of Israel in the desert 40 years, your clothes don't wear out. How many of you see a downside to that? You are wearing the same clothes you had 40 years ago. How many times in that 40 years did somebody say, I don't have a thing to wear? These are the same shoes we left Egypt in. I am sick to death of these shoes, man. How much of what we spend is just shallow? I just, my eyes aren't dazzled by this shirt anymore that I liked so much last year. It's not worn out because I have so many in my closet that I can't wear one out in a year, but there are new ones out. And this year the colors are all different so that I'll look like I'm out of style if I wear that shirt. That's why they changed the colors, folks. They know you didn't wear that shirt out in a year. You got too many. If you had one shirt, you could wear it out in a year without any problem. There's some kind of mutiny going on the back row. I don't know what. I'll have to fill me in on that later. Sometimes people are not generous because, well, let me rephrase it. Sometimes we're not generous because we're just a little bit shallow and way too fixed in worldly thinking. Ooh, okay, that probably killed the discussion. What else? Okay, so you're going to examine your lifestyle. There might be some things you have to cut out if you're going to obey and be a generous person and be wise. You might have to give up something. Changing your clothes out less often would be one example of that. You're going to trust that God will open up the door for opportunities, and when you see them, you're going to give. Those are great steps for your friend who needs now to get obedient. So what are some opportunities? Are there some standards? Are there some that you can always count on? Oh, hey. All right. Support the church. What else?
Okay, I'll go ahead and admit it. For those of us who have the spiritual gift of shopping, I'll sink in a minute.
I would say so, yes.
Kind of an interaction, I guess you could say, not just write the check and drop it off in their mailbox at midnight.
Yeah, you could go by 9 if his house would be just the same. So, yeah, you can give directly to other people. You can be discerning about what they need. And there are a lot of opportunities in that category. And that doesn't have to be, here's, you know, your rent paid or whatever this month. It can be a gift. It can be a lot of things. If you're discerning what they need and you're giving because you have that desire in your heart, I would certainly count that as giving and as being generous. Any other specific opportunity that comes to mind? Yeah, I think you do. You do have to get busy. There's one I want you to think about, and in particular, the Bible talks about the poor, and there are people who are poor that we are specifically told to be generous to. Just like we're told, he who gives to the rich is going to come to poverty. We are told to be generous with the poor. Look at Proverbs 22:9. He who is generous will be blessed, for he gives some of his food to the poor. This person is sharing his food, man, because he knows that that young college student needs it.
he don't share.
Oh, that's why you elbowed him. All right. But here specifically, you know, you've noted that they need it. And you found a way to help them without humiliating them. You're just sharing what you have with somebody else, but specifically with the poor. Look at Proverbs 28:27. He who gives to the poor will never want, but he who shuts his eyes will have many curses. So, again, God is saying, while you're being generous, and particularly if you've got a lot with which to be generous, don't forget those people who are hurting, who are just poor. Now, sometimes it may be their fault, but they're still poor. They're still hungry. And don't shut your eyes to their need, even if there are complicated problems that have led to that need. He who shuts his eyes will have many curses. So, are there some advantages to giving through the local church over giving to the poor?
I think a lot of it depends on that church.
Well, yeah. Guess we'd have to say that anytime we're talking about the church, wouldn't we?
Right, because I think that as I examine and look at a lot of churches, you wonder how they go about thinking about using the money that the people are giving. You know, a lot of times we'll criticize charities because we see the amount of overhead that they have. But I wonder with a lot of churches, if we don't, we need to start thinking about that in the same way and how they're using the resources that are being given. You know, because if they're just there to maintain an edifice,
right,
and support a staff, that doesn't make sense to me.
Well, yeah. Let me tell you what we do. In this church, we have a segment of our budget that's 10% right now, may change, that we set aside for ministry needs. And we'll find out about somebody's need, and sometimes it's pretty significant. And it's usually some of us who have a need, because that comes first. We don't have any obligation to take care of the world in the same way we have an obligation to take care of the children of God. And so oftentimes it's even within our congregation, but sometimes it's a believer outside of our congregation. And we'll just quietly meet that need with what you've given through the church. Sometimes we do that outside of the church. Sometimes we do that for lost people. Depends on the situation and how we think God is leading and how much is in there, which is usually the biggest driving factor. Is there anything left? But there is an advantage. And I'm not saying do one or the other. I'm just saying there are some benefits each way. So maybe I shouldn't say advantage. Benefits is a better word. There are some benefits besides the fact that we can continue to exist. We can pay the rent here. I can give most of my time to preparing messages. And all of that comes from your giving. But specifically in terms of taking care of the needs of the poor, a benefit of your giving to the church and of our committing to set a portion of it aside to help people who have a need, it's harder for somebody to work us because they're having to come to the same people over and over again. And a church, even this size, it could happen, but in churches larger than this one, it often happens that somebody who falls into that category of if anyone will not work, do not let him eat, will come in and work five or six families in the church, and none of them knows that the other ones are kicking in too. And they can go a long time without getting caught taking advantage of people in the church who are trying to be generous, but they're working the system in a way that God didn't intend. They come to us five times, we're starting to go, well, now wait a minute. Sometimes there are counseling issues where, you know, you need to wait, work through something before they get the next bit of help. Sometimes there's other kind of help that, you know, you can point them toward a job, help with this, but now we need to get you working. So there are some benefits with giving through the church. There are also benefits with giving directly to people, particularly if they're poor. You're going to see needs that Tim and I don't see. In fact, most of the time when something comes through the church, one of you has told us, you need to look into this. This person's hurting. They need some help. And we'll either check it out or we'll go on your word and solve the problem, depending on how much detail we get from you. So, you know, there are benefits both ways. You're to do both. If you don't give to the church, then we'll be meeting in a park, doing like the Quakers. Anybody got a word? Because Dave didn't have time to work this week. If you don't support the poor, if you're not willing to help people who need it, if you're not sensitive to those needs, then you're not in this category called wise. So you have to do both. All right, one last question. We got 2 minutes. What is a generous gift? So it's not an amount. It may be a proportion. It's what kind of adjustments were you willing to make in your lifestyle? What are you willing to do without? Gary?
Well, I think another thing is you look at, especially the early church, I mean, I think it is with Ananias and Sapphira, you know, with God striking them dead. It wasn't the issue of them holding back for themselves. I mean, they could have not given.
Right.
They could have given.
Right.
That wasn't the issue. The issue was their dishonesty before God, and also before the people, and just saying, okay, you know, we gave this portion, and being honest about it, you know, they held back a part, but gave the presumption that they were
so, you know, in spite of the fact that they gave most of the value of that land. Were they being generous?
No.
No. They were giving to get, weren't they?
Right.
What were they wanting to get?
A claim.
Yeah. Everybody was so impressed when Joseph did it. Let's do it too. Except, well, we need this much for us. They were giving to get people to be impressed. Still a selfish act. And God did judge it rather harshly. So a generous gift comes from the right heart, and it's not a specific amount, but it is a proportion. For some people, a five-figure gift is not going to be generous. For some people, $10 is generous. Depends on what you got. Now, I said one last question, but let me give you one more last question. What would it do to the giving to the church if everybody just asked that question? Is this generous? What do you think would happen? Asked it with a right heart. We're willing to evaluate that question. I think the wealthy would give a lot more. I've been on Baptist for years about, quit talking about tithing and the rich people will give more. You're giving them an out, man. They're not having to ask, what would God have me do? You're giving them a legalistic out. And 10% is not generous if you make five incomes. So anyway, it's a question to ask yourself. Is it generous? Do I give in a way that can be called generous instead of calculating? If you're wise, you're generous. If you're wise, you have God's blessing. Let me lead us in prayer and we'll be dismissed.